Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with author Catherine Stewart. She's somewhat of an expert in the area of public education and religion, and we'd like to continue that conversation today. A brief bio of Catherine. She was born in Boston. She started her career in journalism, working for investigative reporter Wayne Barrett at the Village Voice, and contributed to Newsweek International, the New York Observer, and Rolling Stone, among others. She co-wrote the book about the musical Rent, and after moving to Santa Barbara in 2005, published two novels about 21st century parenting. She's the author of The Good News Club, an investigative book about public education and religious fundamentalism in America. Most recently, she's written for The New York Times, The Nation, The Atlantic, and The Guardian. We welcome once again to Common Threads, Catherine Stewart. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Fred. Thank you so much for having me.
And so I am going to assume, Catherine, that the next person who introduces you in some broadcast form is going to mention that you have worked for The New York Times, The Nation, The Atlantic, The Guardian, and has appeared on Common Threads.
That's true. Thank you so much for having me back.
Certainly. That's really good company to be in, I just want to tell you. So we do appreciate you. Usually when somebody gets all the way to the New York Times and The Nation and the Atlantic and The Guardian, it's like, oh, who has time for Common Threads? But you do.
I think that working in interfaith issues is so important today because our country is so religiously diverse, and even the Christian faith is so diverse that it's concerning, I think, to when one particular religious group tries to sort of force its agenda into our public schools, for instance, and it creates a lot of pushback, and I think that's some of what we've been seeing today with some of the more forceful initiatives.
This is true.
Religious initiatives in our schools.
This is true. Let's recap very briefly for anyone who was not with us last week. This interview specifically started out as talking about Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education and what that means to the education / religion landscape of this country. But you were able to provide us a fascinating history of religion and public education. And we went all the way back to the latter part of the 19th century to talk about the evolution of this animosity from some quarters of Christianity towards what they call government schools. And it's interesting because I remember hearing the term government schools when I would occasionally tune in to the G. Gordon Liddy radio show, if you remember that, back in the 90s, I think it was. And he would refer to government schools, and I didn't realize he was speaking disparagingly of them. But when you hear that term coming from someone, when somebody decides to use the word government schools as opposed to public schools, chances are they don't like public schools. Isn't that right?
That's true. I mean, President Trump recently proposed his budget for school choice, which would cut more than $9 billion in overall education spending and put more resources into charter schools and voucher programs. He basically, he promised to take a sledgehammer to what he called failing government schools. Now, this is harsh language for the place that most of us call public schools, where 90% of American children get their education. But in certain conservative circles, as you've pointed out, that phrase, government schools, has become pretty ubiquitous.
So let's move into today. And we have a Trump administration, and part of that administration is the current Secretary of Education is Betsy DeVos. Betsy, of course, hails from West Michigan. And I mentioned last week that she doesn't have outstanding support here. I don't know what the numbers are, but I do know that there have been protests. There have been people taking ads out in the local paper. People aren't unanimously thrilled here in the Grand Rapids and the Holland area as to what she is doing. So tell me what you see her objective is, and why is it causing so much controversy?
I think a lot of people are really concerned about her role in that very powerful position, because they understand that at the heart of her efforts to long-standing efforts to promote school vouchers, and then at a certain point to also include promotion of charters, there is a kind of hostility toward public education as a whole. And you know, I want to just point out that in 2001, she spoke to a gathering of conservative Christian philanthropists, and she singled out education reform, which is, you know, vouchers and charters, as a way to, quote, advance God's kingdom. And in an interview she and her husband, Dick DeVos Jr., gave, they said that school choice would lead to, quote, greater kingdom gain. This is the language of Christian nationalists, that is, those who believe that America, they want to reshape our country along certain kinds of religious and political lines. And I think a lot of people don't feel that she should be in charge of our public, you know, the Department of Education, if this is what she wants.
Now, I have to say that I did read one really good article, I think, about Betsy DeVos, and they analyzed that line about advancing God's kingdom, and they were giving her the benefit of the doubt that by that she perhaps was using it in a manner of social justice. That is to say, as opposed to understanding that to say, we are going to create more Christians for this Christian nation, that it could be taken as we believe that it is the moral responsibility of this country to educate our children well. And by charter schools, by vouchers and private schools and all of this, we are accomplishing that objective. Now, I read this article, and it was written by someone from the Reformed faith, and you know, you're speaking to someone who sits in the midst of the Reformed capital of America, probably. I don't know the there are other pockets of Reformed churches that are quite significant here in the country, but Grand Rapids and Holland, you know, there is a significant number. Anyway, now, so when I read this by this this other article who says, well, Betsy probably meant this, but then in your article, we see other things that she and her husband have said that lead me to believe that maybe you're a little bit more right. I'm not sure. Go on.
Well, I can only assume that Betsy DeVos has all of the best intentions, and she truly believes that her vision for America and for education is going to lead to better outcomes for our country. But she does have a very specific agenda, and look, I can't speak to her feelings, really. I can only really speak to her record and her actions and her spending. So let's look at that, because I think if you look at her record and her actions and her spending, that will give us a sense of sort of what she thinks the best vision for America looks like. So first we need to talk about the DeVos and Prince families and the significant role that they have played in funding the religious right. And please bear with me as I go through this, because it does relate back to the issue of public education. But you kind of need to see what they've done with their money over time, not just Betsy and Dick Jr., but also their parents. And by the way, Betsy DeVos sat on the board of her parents' family foundation for years. So yes, she does bear some responsibility for where they chose to spend their money. So Betsy DeVos and her husband stand at the intersection of two family fortunes that helped build the Christian right. In 1983, Edgar Prince contributed to the creation of the Family Research Council, which is one of the leading policy organizations of the religious right. And Betsy's father-in-law, Richard DeVos Sr., has been funding groups and causes on the economic, religious, and religious rights since the 1970s. So Betsy and her husband do share appear to share many of their parents' goals. Through watchdogs that track donor funding through tax filings, those foundations have funded conservative groups, including the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is the legal juggernaut of the religious right behind the Good News Club decision that we discussed last week. They've funded folks on the family and the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. And I think it's worth noting that some of these organizations are very look askance at public education. Mackinac Center for Public Policy has been a huge supporter of vouchers. The Alliance Defending Freedom has also been a huge proponent of school choice and has worked very hard to sort of force religious programming into public schools. It's also worth noting, this is where we get to the really obvious stuff about public ed, the DeVos family was an extremely generous supporter of evangelical pastor and broadcaster D. James Kennedy. Kennedy said in a 1986 sermon that children in public education were being, quote, brainwashed in godless secularism. It was like a very famous sermon where he said something like, if this had been done to our children by, you know, by a foreign government, it would be considered an act of war, what public schools are doing to our kids. He basically said that children in public schools, you know, what was happening to them looked like an act of war. And, you know, D. James Kennedy was, you know, has very specific ideas about government. In 2005, he told his followers to exercise godly dominion over, quote, every aspect and institution of human society, including the government. So, you know, he wasn't the only religious leader who wished to destroy public schools. Jerry Falwell Sr. outlined his goal in his 1979 book, where he said he hoped to see the day when there wouldn't be any public schools, churches will have taken them over, and Christians will be running them. So this kind of agenda from the religious right, whose institutions and policy centers, et cetera, and think tanks have been funded by the DeVos and Prince families, has long looked askance at public education. And I think that's what a lot of the concern about Betsy DeVos comes from. I think a lot of the concern also comes from the history of her activism on behalf of school choice in Michigan and beyond.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is author Catherine Stewart, and we're talking about religion in the public square, particularly in schools, and the administration of Betsy DeVos as the Secretary of Education here in the United States. It's interesting because when she was up for this position, she tried to distance herself from her parents' philanthropic activities by saying that she was just her role on the board of the family foundation was titular. It like an honorary position. She had nothing to do with it. But I think what we can do is, if we ignored everything that the princes did, the elder princes and the elder DeVos, if we ignored everything, nonetheless, we do get a very specific picture of Betsy and Dick DeVos by their funding, you know, what they support. And one thing that I found in your article, which I thought fascinating, is that her husband, Dick Jr., addressed the Heritage Foundation one time, telling them, in essence, that they had to disguise their modus operandi in pursuing their education goals.
Yes, that's true. In 2002, he told a Heritage Foundation audience that we need to be cautious about talking too much about these activities. He said, we've got a wonderful issue that can work for Americans, but to the extent that it's appropriated or viewed as only a conservative idea, we'll risk not getting a clear and fair hearing in the court of public appearance. So we need to be cautious about that. I mean, I think the DeVoses understand well that, stripped of specious language about reform and choice, such a plan for public education would be deeply unpopular. And, you know, my view is if you have an agenda, you know, be clear with your agenda. Just sell it to us. Tell us why it's going to be the best thing for our society and for our schools and for our children. And then we have a clear view of what you're trying to do. And if you really believe in it, why be ashamed of it? Just shout it from the rooftops and tell us why we should join along.
So charter schools, of course, is a subject that of much concern today. I'd like you to talk about some of the abuses that you have found in charter schools, particularly in the area of anti-pluralism. And one example, the Heritage Academy comes to mind. They have this emphasis on memorizing these various points, almost like a mission statement that sounds very sectarian. I'm just curious, would you assume that the parents of the children are very aware of this and are quite content with such a mission statement?
I think that if religion is in the mission statement, parents might be aware of it, but they might not really understand entirely what it's about. I think most parents are just looking for a great school for their kids. I've spoken with many parents and teachers who were really surprised to learn that there was sectarianism in their charter schools. And it's really interesting. Charter schools are funded with public money, and so they're supposed to abide by the same restrictions on, you know, the same regulations about church-state separation as other public schools. But in my travels and research, I discovered that there are so many that don't. And some of them are really blatant about it. So one of the schools I spoke with, I wrote about, is called the Heritage Academy. It's a publicly funded charter network in Arizona. Students there are required to learn the Anglo-Saxon population of the United States is descended from one of the lost tribes of Israel. They're told to memorize a list of 28 principles of sound government, among which are that to protect man's rights, God has revealed certain principles of divine law, and the husband and wife each have their specific roles, rights appropriate to their role in life. And to complete that course, students are supposed to teach these principles to at least 5 individuals outside of school and family. So they're literally instructed to proselytize to other people while they're in school. Now, the complaints against this academy, this charter network, have gone back a dozen years. The board, the charter board, Arizona State Board for Charter Schools, has denied that anything was amiss. And it's a really interesting case because the principles that form the backbone of this course are copied from the work of a guy named W. Cleon Skousen. He was a Mormon theologian who was eventually shunned for his extreme views by the Mormon church. So he was like too extreme for, you know, it's kind of amazing. He was associated with the John Birch Society. And his works are also notable for pro-slavery sympathies and the use of racist sources. So he's, this is a school that actually draws on his work, and it's getting funded with taxpayer dollars. I think that's kind of egregious.
You know what surprises me is that charter schools have to be chartered by colleges. And colleges, if you talk to people on one side of the spectrum, they will tell you that they're bastions of liberalism. And yet they are the ones that are responsible for charter schools. Right now you're speaking to me in the hallowed halls of Grand Valley State University, which owns the license for WGVU. And they charter schools. Can you help us understand that?
Well, my view, my understanding is that charter schools have to be, they are approved or disapproved by state charter boards, and some chartering organizations in some states have one and some states have multiples. So that's kind of my understanding about how charter schools are created. But what's really interesting is that there are charter schools that are started by religious organizations, by colleges such as the Barney Charter Network, which, as you know, is an initiative of the Hillsdale College.
So that's right. Another thing, too, I'm curious, did you hear the American Life, This American Life, the popular public radio program, did you hear the story on Betsy DeVos and her volunteer work in the Grand Rapids Public Schools?
I did not hear that that segment. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
It was wonderful, and I really suggest that you visit the This American Life, which airs here on WGVU. If you go to their podcasts, I'm sure it's in their archives. And it was produced by someone locally here, but aired nationally on This American Life. And what it did, apparently it came up during the hearings that Betsy never set foot in a public school in her life. And it turns out that is incorrect, that she did volunteer here in Grand Rapids at a school that was in a very impoverished neighborhood. And she took a couple people under her wing. And she actually ended up taking a student out of public education and funding this young girl's private education. So it sounds like a success story for this one girl, but it was a success only because she was taken out of one school and then privately funded for another. And that what was interesting at the end of the interview, you got to understand, she just thinks that Betsy DeVos is absolutely fantastic because she did a fantastic thing for her.
Yes.
Right. She was asked, what would you want to tell Betsy DeVos today? And her answer was to help public schools, because she knew she came out of the public school. She saw what condition her public school was in. So, yeah, I would say that you would probably enjoy that episode. Let's talk about vouchers for a second. In your article, one thing that I was very surprised by is that you indicate that, say, minority children, blacks and Latinos, who get vouchers and go to private schools, don't necessarily do all that well. What's the science behind that?
That's true. I mean, voucher, study after voucher study has yielded the conclusion that vouchers are not the solution for the problems of public education. The school choice movement says that they are. Mike Pence, says when he was governor of Indiana, expanded a voucher program that now funnels something like $135 million a year to private schools, almost all of them religious. So he's expanded this enormous voucher program. But a subsequent study of Indiana's voucher program found no change among students' reading scores and significant losses in mathematics. And, vouchers, so that's, I think, in addition to the studies about vouchers in general, we have to look at the vouchers that people say are going to be the solution for dealing with racial and economic segregation issues. A Century Foundation report earlier this year concluded that vouchers actually intensify racial and religious segregation at schools. But there's also another additional problem with that. The loss of community-based schools are able to offer wraparound services such as early education and summer school and student health and nutrition initiatives. So when you lose these community-based schools, when kids are getting bussed around, it's much harder for them to get some of these wraparound services. The author of that study, Martin Carnoy, who is a professor of education and economics at Stanford, he said, all of these yield much higher returns, meaning the wraparound services, than the minor, if any, gains that have been estimated for voucher students. And then if you look at even the NAACP has been really looked askance at some charters and vouchers. So there are organizations that specifically study, pardon me, racial inequality and segregation issues, and they just don't see the gains in ameliorating these problems that some of the voucher proponents say they'll deliver.
Catherine, we are out of time for this episode, but I want to thank you so much for your time today, your time with us last week. It was most informative. And before we go, very quickly, if you could let people know how they can connect with you, how they can read what I've read, some of your fine work.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's both shows. It's been such a pleasure. My recent piece for the American Prospect, called "The Proselytizers and the Privatizers," is about the education reform movement and a surprising number of charter schools that actually have a covert religious or ideological political agenda. Not all charters, of course, but just a significant percentage, which is a sort of surprisingly large percentage. I've also...
Very quickly, Catherine, because we are running out of time, give us your website, and I'm sure that people can connect through that as well.
Sure. You can look at my work through my website. It's www.thegoodnewsclub.com, and my book, The Good News Club, The Religious Right Stealth Assault on America's Children, is available through Amazon.
Okay. Catherine, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Please join us again next week.